Each and every decision you've made in your life has had an impact, shaped you into the person you are today. But what if I told you that there exists a universe for each of those choices, where things turned out differently? This may be a mere theory in our world, but within the realms of comic books, science fiction, or fantasy, it is a reality that holds infinite wonders and horrors. Either way, they make for some good storytelling. So come with us as we talk about the events occurring now and in the future. Let us discuss the state of the multiverse. Hello everyone and welcome back to State of the Multiverse. I am your host, Reese. I was going to say that today's episode will be a review of Thor Love and Thunder, but it's really not even going to be a review. It's more like there's very little that I enjoy with this movie. And that's kind of all I can say in terms of the positives. Like some of the things that I did like was I liked Thor's first suit, where it was very much similar to the Jason Aaron Thor comic runs outfit, just with fur added onto the shoulders of the cloak, which was cool. Star-Lord was kind of fun, even if the dialogue was terrible. The rest of the Guardians were just kind of there and shouting. Gore was actually presented as a loving father, which, you know, like in the previous episode where I said that not fathers aren't really presented very well in modern Marvel, it was quite a surprise. Sif's costume in live action finally was pretty cool, rather than the kind of okay armor she had in the first couple of movies. And the little glimpse of Valhalla we get was cool. Other than that, kind of the biggest thing is they committed to, also, full-blown spoilers will be discussed here, just so if you haven't seen the movie and you want to watch it first, then come back to this if you care to. Other than that, yeah, spoilers. They actually committed to killing off Jane Foster, so we shall see if that remains so. But yes, within this movie she dies, but we will get into that. Now, I'm not sure if I'll even do this episode the way I normally do mine, where I record in portions to make sure I can get it as, you know, clear as I can. I might just make this one big thing and not really edit it that much, because this movie just, anyway. We start off the film with the origins of Gore, the God Butcher, and to be fair, I was held up before getting into the theater, so when I arrived, Gore and his daughter were in the desert and she was dying. So they could have included more before that. I know there was a couple of minutes, like from what I've heard other people discuss about it, there was a few minutes with Gore and his daughter at the start, which I don't know why they cut out the rest of the family. Because I am someone who has read the Jason Aaron Thor run where Gore the God Butcher was created. That is the most of Thor that I have read, although I am currently reading Donny Cates' run, which has been enjoyable. I was very much a fan of this series, and that definitely has an effect on how I see the film, but I think as a film, it is not good. But, so yeah, the opening of the movie is the origin for Gore the God Butcher, where if for those who don't know, he is from a planet of people who are basically always on the brink of death. They have very little water on the planet. There's very little resources. And in the books, he loses his wife, who was pregnant, I believe. And he loses his son, and possibly a daughter as well, but the son was kind of the more focused on one in the book. In the movie, it's a daughter, who I believe is Chris Hemsworth's daughter. From what I heard, that is the actress that plays her. But yeah, so after his daughter dies, he hears a voice calling to him, and he stumbles upon an oasis where his people's sun god resides. And his people are very devout. They live in service to their gods. And this god is surrounded by flower creatures, and he's celebrating, having, and they say this very obviously, having just killed the being that wielded the necro sword, the god killing weapon, that it's just over there next to Gore. But yeah, so this in this scene, it's basically just Gore is begging his god to reunite him with his daughter in eternal paradise. And to be fair, this scene and the final scene with Christian Bale in this movie, he acted very well. The rest, I wasn't a huge fan of. I've heard some people still say that he acts his ass off in this movie. To each their own. I didn't really see it, and he's a very good actor, very good. This movie has some excellent actors in it. Natalie Portman can be great when she's given good material. Russell Crowe is a great actor. Chris Hemsworth, outside of Thor, I haven't seen too much of what he's been in, but what I have seen, I've enjoyed. But basically, this scene just serves for Gore to find out that gods, or at least his god, don't care about humans, or no, not humans, sorry, about their subjects. And the sword appears in his hand after rising up from the ground, and he stabs the god through the neck. And while the god is dying, he gives exposition about how the sword chose Gore. And as I'm sure you've probably seen in the trailers, Gore is like, "This is my vow, all gods shall die." So the first bit we actually get in relation to Thor is Korg, who is played by the director Taika Waititi, retelling the events of Thor's life in what is probably the biggest disappointing gut punch I've had watching a movie in quite a while. It was like, once this bit started, I knew the movie was just not going to be what I hoped. Because, while the version of Gore's origin wasn't as good as I would have liked, I was still like, okay, it's off to an interesting start. But Korg tells the audience the events of Thor's life in terms of the tragedies that he has suffered, especially in recent years, obviously in the MCU. And it's done in a way that is very much, it felt like the moment in Loki where Infinity Stones are used as paperweights by the TVA, and it's very much a kind of a spit in the face of everything that has come before. So the deaths of Odin and Odin's wife Frigga, Thor's mother, are played up for laughs. We are left to watch Loki's different deaths, and then particularly the one from Infinity War, which was obviously the final one. All while Korg is trying to crack jokes, and this is just like a running thing in the movie. It's like 90% trying to be jokes, and most of them don't land. I didn't laugh once watching the movie, and I'm not even exaggerating. Really, I found it horribly unfunny, and it was just terrible. But back on track. The probably the most annoying of the deaths that are made fun of is the one for the Warriors 3, where Korg says to the audience, like, "Oh, and Thor lost this guy and that guy, and then whoever that one was, from when they died in Ragnarok." And then it's all, he went from dad bod to god bod, and there's a lot of that in the movie, like that type of talk. And I think it's three different times, maybe four actually, from what I remember. But Korg does this, let me tell you the story of the space Viking. And, like at least two of them are for Thor, and then one's for Jane. But yeah, let's get on to Thor himself in this movie. In this movie, Thor is a fucking moron who spends the whole movie being the joke. Every moment he's on screen, it's basically him failing to be the hero that he needs to be for his people and for anyone else. He makes terrible speeches and doesn't take charge in any scene. He's just kind of there for the story. And for those wondering why I didn't mention the Guardians of the Galaxy so far, it's because they're not really worth mentioning. Not in this movie. They're off probably doing something that's way more interesting than this, than the events of this film. But yeah, so there, yeah, fuck it, I'll talk about the Guardians. Peter Quill is the only one that kind of gets anything to do, and because he has to talk with Thor. Nebula just screams once or twice. Rocket is annoyed as per usual. Drax talks about how they're all gonna die. I think Mantis makes a noise. Groot laughs. They're on this planet where like Thor has been reluctant to take part in any action until he's called upon by his teammates, and he through the very obnoxious use of Guns N' Roses in this film, which happens so often, and they are great songs. They are fucking amazing songs. But he goes into he eventually jumps off a cliff that he was sitting on, riding Stormbreaker like a witch's broom. And then he goes into battle to stop these aliens from attacking another alien species, sacred temple that is made out of very delicate glass. And he goes into battle spinning fucking Stormbreaker around, doing flips. And it's very. It doesn't feel like any action we've seen Thor take part in before. Like, obviously in Ragnarok you had him spinning around a bit, but it wasn't to the extent of this movie. It felt like there was some terrible visual effects in this movie. And from what I heard, some of it was done in the volume, the same place where they film Mandalorian and Kenobi and all that sort of stuff, which I am working on the Kenobi review, but between, work and other things that are taking up my time lately, it's taking a while. And that show was just very much a disappointment for me. But yeah, back to Thor. We'll address Kenobi another day. So he takes out all of these other aliens in very screaming, ridiculous ways. Like, and he does a lot of kicking in this action sequence. Like it's very much like Jean-Claude Van Damme style action where it's just lots of kicks, and then he stops two alien gangs on like giant bikes when they both try to drive into him. He stops them with doing a complete split with very CGI legs. And it's like, I don't know if, depending on where you're from, I don't know if you've seen the commercials or not, but the ones with Jean-Claude Van Damme where he'd do like splits between two trucks, or so it was very much like that. And he's doing that while holding the splits, and he's looking at these weird bird aliens, and they're screaming, and he's screaming, and he looks at them, and he looks at the other one, and the other one's screaming, so he screams at it. And then he jumps up and they crash into each other. And he flies all the way up through the glass temple and comes out the top with the other aliens, and he defeats them all. And then he lands and he's like, oh, what another classic Thor adventure. And this is something he says a lot throughout the movie. And each time it's followed by him fucking up. because behind him, of course, the very delicate glass temple is destroyed. So as a reward for saving these people, these aliens, they gift him two goats. And I was excited as hell to see the goats in the movie because they are from the comics. And they were really cool in the books because during the time span of Thor being unworthy, he had his axe Yarnbjorn, and it doesn't have an enchantment like Mjolnir to where it can return to him. So whenever if he ever lost it, or if he threw it after an enemy and he couldn't retrieve it, the goats would go and get it for him. And it was just kind of a cool thing. But in this movie, dear God, do I hate the goats. The goats need to just go, because they... Do you remember that meme from back when, like, Vine was a thing in, like, 2015, 2016? And people would make compilations of songs out of goat screams. And that was funny at the time. Some of them were genuinely funny. But it's just 2 hours of that. Like, it's the two goats just fucking screaming at every opportunity in the movie. But yeah, so they're brought onto the ship. And of course the Guardians don't want them there. Nebula tries to kill it. Thor jumps in the way to protect it. Yeah, it's just... He, of course, has the goodbye speech with Star-Lord, you know, he's like, oh, take care of my ship, and obviously Peter Quill is thinking it's his ship anyway. But, yeah, so the two of those have to... Sorry. Thor and Korg are going to leave to go and deal with an emergency beacon, because that's what the Guardians and Thor have been doing. They've been reacting to emergency beacons, and on the screen that comes up for them, Thor sees Sif, who we haven't seen since Thor the Dark World. I know the actress appeared in Loki, but I'm not acknowledging that. But yeah, so she talks about in the video how the God Butcher has attacked. So Thor makes his way to that planet with Korg and the two goats. And in that screen that they were looking at, that is the most God Butchering we get in the whole movie. We see very quick images of dead gods. We see the one that was heavily used in the trailers, which is taken right out of the books, the behemoth. Like Vanagar or whatever his name was. It was like such a cool visual from the book. And when I saw that in the trailer, I was so excited because it was taken virtually right off the page. And then you see other gods, possibly the Indigar gods, I forget, because that could be from the book as well. But they're hung up on meat hooks. And it's like, because in the book, it's very atmospheric. It's very dark and foreboding of the challenge that Thor has ahead of him with this new enemy. But he arrives on this planet and he eventually finds Sif, who, from the angle they filmed it, you wouldn't know until it's mentioned that Sif has lost her arm and she didn't even realize. And Thor says, "You're missing an arm." And she looks down and is like, "Oh, so I am." And he says, "Oh, we will get you medical attention." And she's like, "No, let me die. Let me die in battle and go to Valhalla." And he says, "But you have to die in the battle to go to Valhalla." To which Sif responds, "Ah, shit. I don't know about you guys. I know Thor's been modernized. Does that sound like Asgardian talk to you?" But anyway... Yeah, so that also, just bear that in mind, that you have to die in the battle to go to Valhalla. But anywho, they bring Sif back to New Asgard, and she's given medical attention. Thor arrives there, and I'm just going to kind of skip over some small things because I forget the exact order of how they come out on screen. But basically, Thor is in New Asgard, and they are being attacked by Gorr, the God Butcher. He uses the Necro Sword to summon the shadow creatures, and they're attacking the town. And Valkyrie, who I'm not calling her King Valkyrie, she shows up in her kind of t-shirt and shorts, and with her spear. And Thor, and then like they're fighting off the creatures with the other Asgardians, and then eventually Thor sees his hammer, Mjolnir, reconstructed, flying around, being destroying the creatures. And it's this moment where Thor is trying to get the hammer's attention. And this is a running theme throughout the movies where they talk to the weapons as if they have personalities. And I am aware that within the comics, Mjolnir does have a certain consciousness to it. That's how it picks who's worthy. And I believe in the Jane Foster Thor stuff, they added that it's a storm god that lives within the hammer. But anyway, so Thor, I felt really bad for him in this scene, because he's trying to get the hammer to come back to him, and it eventually stops in front of him. And he's like, Mjolnir, I'm right here, come here, you know. And he's trying to reach out and grab the hammer. And of course it gets pulled away and goes back to Jane Foster. And he's like, oh, you stole my hammer, you stole my look, blah, blah, blah. You know, once this fight's done, you're gonna have to give that back. And she removes her very CGI helmet, and it's Jane Foster. And Thor switches from, which this I think this was the point for me where I am done with the CGI suits. I'm done with the nanotech suits. I'm done with the, you know, like the ease to which they can remove and put back on the suits. Because Thor, I understand they use magic. Same way Wakanda and fucking Iron Man have nanotech or whatever the fuck, but it's just, it's. If you're gonna do that, at least when the camera is on them, when they are in action, have something real on the screen. Because if you look at behind the scenes stuff for Marvel movies now, it's just a bunch of actors standing surrounded by green. It's like when they filmed the fucking prequels. But anyway, Thor switches his costume that he has since the start of the movie to a god-awful mixture of blue, gold, silver, and red, and this terrible helmet, which is also CGI. Because he's like insecure about this new Thor looking better than him, I guess. I don't know. Like it's stupid. But anyway, so Gorr kidnaps all the children from Asgard and takes them away to the Shadow Realm and puts them in a cage. One of these children is Heimdall's son. We never knew that Heimdall even had a partner, regardless of the fucking gender. You know, like, but we didn't know that there was anything like that for him to even have a child, because didn't he die on the fucking ship leaving Asgard? You know, obviously they could have made the kid before that, but you know, we didn't know about any of that stuff. And so basically, Thor has to kind of react to that in terms of having to go, you know, save the kids. But there's a lot of back and forth. Fucking, you know, it's. I heard someone relate this to the 2016 Ghostbusters. And honestly, I can see the similarities. Like, there's a lot of. Like, apparently, this movie was originally 4 hours. And they cut out all, like, a lot of the improv to get it down to what's in the movie, and what's in the movie is shit, so I can only imagine. But yeah, so Valkyrie has to take a break from her fucking Old Spice commercials and meetings that, you know, have her extremely bored because the townspeople are they're very scared because their children have just been kidnapped. And they, of course, you have Matt Damon and the other Hemsworth is a Luke Hemsworth. They are Asgardians who are actors, and they're immediately like, we should start writing a play about this for our next show. And all the Asgardians are panicking, and Thor is there looking at Jane and Valkyrie, and he's they start talking about the ex-weapon and the ex-girlfriend, so his two exes are hanging out. And he's trying to summon Mjolnir with like slowly, and Stormbreaker starts coming around the corner real slow, and he gets nervous when Stormbreaker appears and starts talking to it like it's his abusive girlfriend that like is angry with him. And this is something I found very annoying in the movie, that Thor is very much insecure about Jane having the hammer. And granted, I'm not a huge fan of the Jane Foster Thor stuff. I didn't read it when I read through Jason Aaron's run. I watched it on YouTube. Like, I just watched someone else talk about it just so I'd know the context of where things were at in the story in terms of Asgard, because other stuff happens in that. But in the film, it's very much a case of Thor has to repeatedly tell Stormbreaker that he's fine with his ex being with someone else. And Stormbreaker is very much used for that type of comedy. And he even pours beer onto Stormbreaker at one point. Like, you know, like, oh, we'll have our first beer together. And it's, this is the fucking weapon that we needed to kill Thanos. And now it's his scary fucking girlfriend. Anywho, Jane, she keeps hold of the hammer. Thor gets the attention of all the Asgardians, and I was thinking, oh, finally, the guy who should be fucking leading these people is gonna, you know, make them feel a little bit better and, you know, tell them to put their faith in him and he will return their children to them. He tries, but he immediately starts losing track of what he's saying, much like myself. But he's losing track of what he's saying because there's a whiteboard marker making a sound in the background, and we realize it's Meek from Ragnarok scribbling and drawing all over the whiteboard, taking minutes. And the speech just dies there, and then we have a fucking, what felt like a 20-minute fucking sequence of Thor, Jane, Valkyrie, and Korg all kind of making jokes back and forth, where what you're supposed to take from it is they need to go to Omnipotent City, which is from the books, and I was excited to see that. But they need to go there and raise an army of gods. And from what I knew of the books, granted, like, I could be wrong, it's been a while since I've read it, Omnipotent City was an archive of god history. And there was librarians there that catalogued all this stuff, and gods were very much there. But they, in the movie, it's basically a huge hangout spot for gods from every pantheon, not even just Earth, but alien gods as well. And also, just what I think of it, Thor really didn't do a good job with, you know, helping the scared parents of the children who were taken by someone that is called the God Butcher. But anyway, yeah, and before they leave, Thor yet again tries to make a speech about getting the children back, and that when they will return, they will feast and celebrate, and he makes a point to say that we won't be feasting on the children, not again. That was a dark time. Apologies for those who are listening with headphones. What the fuck? Anyway, Omnipotent City was okay to look at, but the CGI was terrible. But we spend way more time focusing on naked Thor and Chris Hemsworth bare ass and people staring at Thor's penis and talking about god orgies and making sure that we avoid the female character suffering the same fate of being forcibly stripped for a giant hall full of people, because that would be a traumatic experience for them, obviously. But Thor, it's fine. Yeah. Russell Crowe is okay as Zeus. I didn't love it, but there's been worse. They don't get an army of gods. They seemingly kill Zeus. Thor uses Zeus's own thunderbolt weapon to puncture a hole through him, and we later learn in the after credit scene that this is not the case. That if he's not dead, he's possibly dying, but he's just kind of hanging out with a hole in his chest. And he wants his son Hercules to go after Thor and teach the world to fear the gods again. That's one of the post-credit scenes, so let's get out of the way now. Other than that, it's mainly just a lot of the movie telling us of what Gore is doing. Like, we're being told that he's butchering gods. We're being told that he's taking down whole pantheons. We don't see any of it. We never see anything. It's a lot of just tell, don't show, which is very fucking frustrating. Because if I have a character come onto screen and I have everyone be like, oh, well, he's really evil. We should be afraid of him. Or the other way around. Like, oh, he's really good. But I don't see the character do anything to prove that. I'm just being told what to think. I'm not seeing the evidence. I'm not seeing why I should think one way or another about that character. And in terms of Gore, his power really just depends on what the scene needs. Like, he's very much easily able to overpower not just Thor, but Jane and Valkyrie all at the same time, nearly taking Stormbreaker very quickly into the first battle with Thor. And, you know, for those who might not remember, Stormbreaker, you just have to be strong enough to lift it. That's why characters like Captain America and Thanos are able to wield it. And it's very much stupid, because later on they have to obviously figure out how to defeat him, but they just do what they did before, more or less. Now, I'm sure those of you who haven't seen the film are wondering, Reese, how is Jane, Natalie Portman's character, Thor? Well, dear listener, she has cancer. That's kind of it. But no, so she gets told she has cancer. There's a very brief scene that is meant to tell us that it runs in her family. But she says that she hears Mjolnir calling to her. I don't think we ever actually hear the voice. But she goes to New Asgard to the museum that they have there, where they have the remnants of Mjolnir. And she's just standing there with her hood up and a jacket, and while the rest of the tour guided group leaves, she remains there with all the Asgardian guards around her as well. And she walks up to it, and the pieces of Mjolnir starts sparking and vibrating and moving. So basically, Mjolnir just reforged itself. Why didn't it do that for Thor? Could it, like, if it had done that, Thor wouldn't have needed to get Stormbreaker. And even if he, even if it had, or even if he had made Stormbreaker, Mjolnir would have come in handy. We saw how useful it was to have the two of them in Endgame. And so, like, someone said to me that they, like, and this is someone who isn't very familiar with the workings of Marvel stories. Someone said that maybe it needed her to fix itself. That's not how the hammer works. Or if it is, that's never explained. There's only one possible thing that does it, but it's a very stupid. And I it's basically how that works is that we see flashbacks to when Thor and Jane were together, and Thor basically says to Mjolnir, "You're always going to need to look after her." And next thing you know, the runic symbol on the hammer that we only see when enchantments are being placed upon it by Odin, it lights up. And we hear Korg saying, "Well, sometimes things can just become mystical," or something like that. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? So it waited, assumably, it waited for her for all this time and then reforged itself. But surely it could reforge itself, go back to Thor, because he could use it to protect her. But also now, because it has reformed, it has new powers. All the cracks in it can split apart and attack every bad guy it needs to without hitting a single individual that is innocent. It's very precise. It's like a shotgun almost, but that's, it has the visual of a shotgun because they're obviously not precise. Why did Gore kidnap all the children? I know in the movie it's meant to seem like it's to draw Thor in and to get him to come, but Thor, he keeps having these, I call them Asgardian Skype calls, but he gets the son of Heimdall to use his magic eyes through one lesson to be able to bring Thor's consciousness and make him visible to the group. And he's basically just does these calls to just say to them, "You guys are really brave. Keep doing that." And like the kids even take the piss out of him at one point, I believe. And by the end of the movie, like I'm skipping around a lot. I'm going through notes that I made about the movie, and I care so little for this film that coherency is not my priority at the moment. But by the end of the movie, Thor gives all of these children his powers, and they help him fight all the shadow creatures so he can get to Gore. So if you could do that, a fucking Avengers team with Thor powers would have been handy. Jane's cancer story doesn't really even go anywhere. It's just kind of there, like it's blurted out like a couple of times throughout the movie about the fact that she has cancer. At the end of the movie, it is the most on the nose talking to the audience line that I've ever heard, because Taika Waititi, the director, is very much against the Lady Thor or female Thor or like calling Jane anything other than what she states in this film that she wants to be called. So at the end of the film, in the final fight, she starts calling herself the Mighty Thor with no explanation. And she says that if that doesn't work, if you can't call me the Mighty Thor, call me Dr. Jane Foster. And it's basically looking at the fucking camera almost. Also, side point, Natalie Portman has CGI arms in the movie. There you go. Look at the behind the scenes, she's got the tracking dots, and she's not that fucking big. Probably the biggest fuck you moment between Jane and Thor is that they have this conversation about how Jane made Thor worthy, how he was a bad person before he met her, and basically every good aspect of Thor is because of Jane. That without her, he would never be able to lift up the hammer. That he wouldn't have done all of this other fucking stuff that he's done in the movies without her. So it's very much it's like that whole needing the established character to validate the new one, but in like to the extreme worst way to me. Yeah, it's fucking stupid. And Jane's discovery of her power and her feelings about it happen off screen. And even in the movie, it's stated that she's only been a Thor for a minute, but she's already this good. And it's it could have just re the hammer could have just reformed at any point, and I find that really ridiculous. And we don't know how Jane is worthy. She, when she's in the hospital earlier on in the movie, she sees a kid next to her who is reading her book, and she starts quizzing him on it. And this kid didn't even know she was the author; he was just reading. And she's like, "Yeah, I wrote that book. Do you, like, what did you think about this part and the Einstein-Rosen bridge and?" He talks about how it's a little bit complex. And she starts asking, well, have you seen Event Horizon? Have you seen Interstellar? And saying how like those, you know, like, and this is while they're both sitting there getting treated with chemo. And she has stage 4 cancer, but she looks perfectly fine, obviously, until the movie needs her to not. And I heard Az from Heel versus Babyface make a comment about how it would have been, and like not play it for a joke, like play it seriously, that at one point her hair comes off and we see it's a wig, because her hair looks really false in this movie, and I honestly thought that was gonna happen as well, and then fucking Darcy walks in and tells the audience how committed Jane is to staying in the lab to cure cancer. As opposed to being in the hospital to cure her cancer. And Jane is there trying to squeeze all the liquid out of her chemo IV, and she's trying to like hurry it along, basically. And there's this whole thing about how Jane and Thor broke up, and basically she dumped him because he wasn't there. Because he was off saving the world, and he's apparently obsessed enough to know the exact date of which certain things happened in their relationship and when they broke up, and you know, up until now, but he wasn't paying attention to her. And her reasoning, even though she left him, is that he wasn't there to see her leave. That's why she left a note. Bitch, he got a call from Nick Fury and was saving the world. We saw it in the movie. Anywho, and when she's in her lab, we see that she has a book on Norse mythology, and That basically just is the moment where she's like, she realizes what she needs to do. And this book on Norse mythology is like, oh, well, Mjolnir grants incredible strength, and the camera lingers on this for a long time. Health. Health. The hammer grants health. And again, to the point of that we don't know why she's worthy, she wants the hammer for selfish reasons. And I understand the self-preservation aspect of it, but that is not worthy. She shouldn't be worthy. I'm probably gonna wrap this up soon because I'm starting to get annoyed at my own voice. But yeah, may as well talk about Valkyrie. She was a big part of the fucking marketing in terms of her sexuality. They've been advertising this movie as the gayest Marvel movie ever, and the most we get of that, which Valkyrie, there was no need to have her in this movie, but people are gonna scream and go nuts over the iconic moment of her kissing the hand of what there are is apparently called the Zeusettes, the women that are with Zeus when he appears, and hey, it was a nice distraction from the rest of the fucking movie, I'll give them that. But yeah, she steals Zeus's thunderbolt after Thor kills him, and she runs up to the edge and turns around and grabs the hand of one of the Zeusettes and starts kissing the hand and then jumps off, which has lingered on for a bit too long, to be honest. But I figured she was going to do something before she left. And honestly, by the rules of the people that go on about these movies, if it, that'd be sexual assault, just saying. But that's only if a man does it. If her sexuality is such a big thing for the movie, make a point of having it be fucking relevant rather than using it for the marketing. Like, have her be like in a relationship with somebody, like a serious one. 'Cause in the movie, there's jokes about her and Thor both wanting to get with Jane, and Korg has a conversation with her about how she has so many special someones that she has had over the years to fill the void. But like, this is a character who has never had to answer for anything. And don't get me wrong, when I watched Ragnarok the first time, I thought she was fucking cool. But the more I thought about it, I'm like, wait, no. She's a terrible person. Obviously, she went through something traumatic when she fought Hela with the other Valkyries. But all the other Valkyries died. And she went off, became basically a slave trader on Sakaar, and drank herself, fucking silly in between bringing people into a gladiatorial arena to die, and then she was rewarded with the Kingdom of Asgard. But yeah, so in terms of what we could do, you could have her and man, woman, fucking alien, I don't give a shit, have someone that genuinely cares about her and that she cares about, and maybe they don't want her to go off and fight someone named Gore the God Butcher. Yeah, anywho, what else do we need to mention? Hercules looks terrible in the post-credit scene. The ending of the movie, Thor is basically handed off the child of Gore the God Butcher to raise, and she wields Stormbreaker while he wields Mjolnir. Jane dies and goes to Valhalla, even though she didn't die in battle. Just leaving that there for emphasis. Yeah, so we leave off with Thor running and about to fight some aliens with his new child that has purple heat vision. Oh, I forgot to mention, New Asgard, they've been like, industrializing. They've been getting a lot of branding and stuff like that. As I said, Valkyrie does Old Spice commercials. But guess what they've got? They've got an ice cream shop called Infinity Cones. And I have to give credit to Az from Heel vs. Babyface when he mentioned that. That would be the same as a Jewish tailor opening a store called Auschwitz. Because yeah, we're gonna make a store about the item that an alien used to wipe out half of our people that was left after he fucking slaughtered them all on the fucking escape shift escape ship after they had to evacuate Asgard, and then killed half of those with a fucking snap. Other than that, we just have screaming fucking goats for 2 hours. I already mentioned about the fucking visual effects was terrible. Korg is gay, by the way. Yeah, he goes off and meets another Cronin with a big biker mustache named Dwayne, and they hold hands and make a rock baby. There you go. Gore wasn't threatening in the slightest. He's more of a joke than fucking scary. Doesn't hold a candle to the fucking book version of the character. Jesus. Why was Korg in every bit of this fucking movie? It's like Taika just wanted to just put himself in the whole fucking thing, didn't he? And apparently there's a fucking Korg solo series on the way. Dear God. And this was all just the latest time that Thor had to go and find himself. Like, really? Thor 1, he has to discover, humility. Thor 2, he loses people and has to learn more about what it is to be a hero. Thor 3 loses fucking everything, like, of his homeland and his father. Has to fight his sister that he never knew existed. He doesn't even defeat her, but that's beside the point. And then he becomes king. Infinity War loses Heimdall, loses half of what's left of Asgard, loses Loki, and then fucking, it feels like he's the reason that everybody lost half of existence by the end of the film. Endgame, he goes through 5 years of fucking depression. He becomes overweight. He fucking sits around playing video games and drinking. He goes to Tony Stark's fucking funeral in Crocs for fuck's sake. And then hands off his fucking kingdom to the fucking slave trader. So we basically have a story of a man prepping his whole life to succeed his father, learning lessons along the way, becomes ready for that reluctantly, gets it all taken away, gets it back to hand it off to somebody else so he can go hang out with his friends. And now he's scared of his fucking axe because it's jealous of his old fucking hammer. They've ruined his fucking character, and now he's got a kid which he doesn't even need at this point in the story. Thor doesn't need a kid to give him fucking relevance or purpose, and I'm not saying that couldn't be an interesting story. That could be a very cool fucking story. He needs Asgard. He needs responsibility. Oh, Jesus. The fucking. I'm kind of just losing it at this point, folks. I'm sorry, this is just turning into a big old rant. I thoroughly dislike this movie, and I'm still working on the position of each film in the ranking of the MCU for when I eventually do that. I'm going to have a guest on there so I can discuss it with somebody when I'm doing that. But this is definitely going towards the bottom. It's 2 hours of bad jokes, bad CGI, and nothing else. No, actually, I correct myself. 2 hours of bad CGI, bad jokes, and character assassination. This has been State of the Multiverse. I've been your host, Reese. You can find us on Instagram or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening.